take away the hype of like, oh yeah, we're something exciting that's on the way up. What's your brand or your business actually about? Like, you know, what do you stand for? Would anybody else be able to sort of repeat that back to you as to what your brand is about and stands for beyond what the mechanism of what your product does? And that will hold true regardless of what the market is doing.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. We've got a special episode today about Web3 brand building. This was from our session at Zebu Live, London's biggest Web3 conference. Zebu Live is put on by Flight3, that's the agency that was acquired earlier this year by Stephen Bartlett, man of the moment. He also spoke on the main stage shortly after this panel. I wanted to curate a group of really brilliant people who have a solid background in marketing, who could offer insights as to how to get Web3 marketing and brand building really right. There's quite a lot of brash marketing in Web3. Sometimes that works, sometimes it's got a bit too little thought behind it. And while I appreciate that Web3 does demand a different approach, I don't think we should throw out the rule book completely. So you're going to hear from me, Lauren Ingram. You're going to hear from Renee Francis. She's an agency owner. Niamh Lenihan, she leads all of our partnerships at Women of Web3, and she's also a CMO as her day job. Plus Camilla Perkis-White, who's from a traditional beauty marketing background. And the conversation is moderated by Anastasia Mahler from digital fashion company DressX. So enjoy. So my name's Lauren Ingram. I'm the founder of Women of Web3, which I've been running for the last something like 20 months. I'm talking about it as though it's like a baby. So we're on a mission to educate as many women as possible about Web3, help them seize opportunities in it. Previously, I was a marketer. I've been a marketer in tech for about 12 years across from like sort of tiny little blockchain startups in 2014 all the way up to Meta a few years ago, and now running my own thing.
Great. Hi everyone, my name is Renee Francis. I'm here from Australia, in case you can't tell from my accent. I'm the founder of two agencies. My first is The Bubble Co. It's a Web2 digital marketing agency, been running for 7.5 years. And more recently, I founded Take3, which is a Web3 dedicated agency. And in Australia, we work with clients like Binance. We help them with their content, a layer one blockchain called the Red Belly Network, the Australian Crypto Convention, crypto lending protocols, so a wide range of clients. I entered this space around 2019, 2020, when I started learning how to invest in crypto. And in the last bull run, I think there was a point where I had about 100 altcoins in my portfolio. But it was a good bull market for me, and I'm really excited to be here, so thanks for having me.
Hi, my name is Niamh. I work for a company called Factor Labs. We are an on-chain credit marketplace and connecting investors with businesses looking for alternative sources of capital through the tokenization of real-world assets. I also run Women at Web3 alongside Lauren, and we met at Meta. I was there when they did the pivot from Facebook to Meta. But my background is mainly in ad tech and martech, so I've worked at Meta, Adobe, and Hootsuite.
Hi everyone, I'm Camilla Perkis-White. I'm a brand marketing leader, and I've worked with leading brands such as Unilever and Coty Beauty, and really helping them propel not just their brand marketing, but entering the space of emerging tech. I'm also the host of the podcast Web3 for Good, and run a research aggregator called Glitch Glam, which is aggregating all beauty brands' adoption of Web3 and emerging technologies.
And my name again is Anna. I'm a marketing lead at DressX, the biggest digital fashion retailer. I joined the company 3 years ago, just at the start, and I'm leading all of our marketing activities and projects with companies like Meta, Google, Snap, Roblox, and all of the major fashion brands that you see fashion activations in digital at the moment. So I would love to start this conversation actually with the switch from Web2 to Web3. And I know that some of the panelists have their experience in Web2 as well. And we can see, obviously, after this fashion months that lots of brands are starting to dip their toes in this space and try something new in tech. So I was going to ask you, whoever wants to start, what do you think are the most important things to consider whenever you're thinking of trying and making some project in Web3 space as a Web2 brand? And what are the common mistakes and maybe the best advice you have for the brands?
Yeah, I traditionally come from working with a lot of Web2 brands. And of course, the big question that has been on our lips for the last couple of years is, should we or how do we adopt Web3 technologies? From a marketing point of view, we have to really understand, is our consumer there or is that the consumer that we're looking to convert? And we need to think of things in a short and a long-term plan. I think it depends also how broad you take Web3. You know, if you look at something like just on-chain, or if you look at emerging technologies like augmented and virtual reality, then the adoption can be much more entertainment-led and bringing people in that sense. But from a marketing standpoint, I'd say the traditions remain the same. It needs to be consumer first and serving them always. And when we think of from a wider business adoption, you know, I think we really see the successes when it comes from the top. And you can see that in some conglomerates that are really adopting technology. But I would say you need to make sure that your strategy is aligned into why you're going in there before you start playing in what sort of spaces you're going to develop.
Yeah, I would agree. I would also say, having been in a big organization that did a pivot from Web2 to Web3, don't forget to educate your internal staff and team and bring them along on the journey with you. Explain the reason why you're doing this, why you see the value in it, and why you're investing in this space. I think if you fail to do that, you're going to fail, just in general. I also think thinking about, do you actually want to have something that's going to be ongoing and long term, or do you want to maybe just dip your toe in and do something that's a one-off activation just to see if the appetite is there with your audience as well? It doesn't necessarily have to be building an activation on Roblox or Fortnite. You could like just do something with an agency that's a one-off kind of experiential immersive advertising experience and see how that sits and lands and then build from that.
Yeah, so just to add on to the education piece, so running a Web2 marketing agency, we have large multinational global clients, and where we actually started was with education. So we actually developed a whole Web3 training workshop, and we went to all our Web2 clients, and these clients are in the construction industry, industrial manufacturing, so traditional industries that are always behind in digital and behind in emerging tech. And we just watched their minds being blown one by one about, you know, blockchain technology and different use cases and applications. And from there, after the education is when we started building in specific proposals and use cases for them. And it's not always marketing as well that attracts them. So, for example, we have a client that does power tools for tradies. And one of the biggest issues in that industry is tool theft. So a lot of tradies leave their expensive tools in their trucks, utes and, you know, cars overnight, and it results in a lot of theft. So we introduced blockchain technology to them as a way of, you know, reducing tool theft and being able to make trackable and unstealable tools in a sense. And then obviously, like, we partner with blockchain development houses to deliver a project like that. And then obviously we help with the con side of it. But it's all about, yes, education, but then showing them very specific use cases that show that solve a problem that they've had for a long time in the industry.
Yeah, and I guess sort of connected to all of that, any Web2 brand just needs to get really clear about the why, like what are the actual objectives for going into this, because it's going to cost quite a lot of money, be a lot of late nights. So is it worth it? Is it, you know, is it a money-making exercise? You know, that's okay if that is the objective, but getting clear on, okay, it's a revenue-generating exercise or it's a sort of cost reduction exercise. If it's there might be some aspect of kind of blockchain for supply chain, there might be your motivation in that sense. It might be more of a sort of PR push of getting your brand to be seen as a sort of innovative brand leader. But just keeping coming back to that reason is what's going to sort of drive things forward. Otherwise, you can't make any decisions off the back of it. So as soon as you're clear on that, then it becomes clearer how to make every decision beyond that point.
Yeah, actually, working at DressX, we noticed a lot that big brands would be a bit scared of like losing their main audience, a normal traditional audience that has been with them for a while trying to get this new people who are more interested in Web3. What do you think is the best strategy for like testing the ground and understand how your main audience will treat your kind of next step in the Web3?
It's really funny because I have a lot of deja vu, because we were having the same conversations, would you believe it, when social media came out. Mm. And as brands, we were like, oh, I don't know, these young kids on YouTube, I don't know, like they're not for us, I don't understand it. And now if I asked anyone in this room what YouTube was, they would be able to answer me in three words very simply. So new technology, we always go through this process, and there's like always fear of, is my consumer there? Who is my consumer? And normally that comes from like, I don't understand what it does and how people use it. So I think what we need to do is well, like destigmatize the fear around like adoption, because we're with it with everything, even from our mobile phones, you know, moving from playing Snake to now, you know, trading crypto on our mobile phones, there's always change. And that's why as leaders in this space, it is your job to make that UX as clear as possible, make that language as clear as possible, and make it as inclusive as it can be, so that kind of that fear of adoption goes.
You need to speak to both audiences. You've got to have both audiences in mind of your Web3 native audience who might be sort of primed and ready to buy from you, or your sort of typical audience, if say you're like a Louis Vuitton of this world, that a lot of people that are buying luxury aren't necessarily familiar with a lot of like kind of any Web3 technology and would be actually quite turned off by it. So it's really hard to create messaging that speaks to both and doesn't alienate either audience, but you've got to have messages available to both. Because if you go on to probably most DeFi or crypto focused websites, if you're not already deep into this stuff, it is a completely alienating experience, and it wouldn't give you any reason to go and sort of buy or trade with this company. It would be actually a massive turn off. So there's got to be things that also speak to them. And in exactly as you were saying, it's like normal, natural language. People don't speak in acronyms when they're down the pub. So, you know, how do you speak to people as the real humans that they are?
Exactly. And just to Camilla's point around social media, I love that point, because I've been in marketing for over 15 years, and I remember having conversations with founders, with GMs, CEOs, saying, okay, you need to get into social media. And they would literally sit there and say to me, there's this young girl telling me that my big company that's been running for decades needs to now post pictures on the internet every day. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And it's so good bringing that conversation back up now when we're trying to introduce Web3 and saying, do you remember what happened when we spoke about social media? And, you know, this is, you know, another technology, you know, evolution that's happening. So it is really good to remind them of that, actually.
Like, think about what it's going to bring to your end user. Think about what it's going to bring to your customer. Are you trying to shoehorn the technology into what you're offering because you want to be seen to be innovative, or is it actually adding to the experience that the customer is expecting from you? And I think that's kind of where like the luxury and the Web3 space really melds quite nicely, because it does give that kind of exclusivity, like rarity, scarcity element that people who buy Lux enjoy. And so they've kind of managed to marry those two. But if you are just trying to force the tech into it because you just want to be using it, then I think you're not going to get very far.
Actually, sorry, just one more thing to say on when speaking to Web2 brands, if anybody in this room is also kind of tasked with speaking to big brands about how they might activate in this space, I think we do tend to talk about Web3 as a sort of inevitability, as a kind of like, everything's going this direction, there's no going back. And even though I do kind of feel that in my heart, Web3 isn't going to replace everything that came before it. We're not going to be only using decentralized technologies instead of anything like Instagram. We're not going to sort of see everyone just dropping those technologies. And so we need to be sort of making sense for these brands of in what way it would be additive. You know, it's a sort of selection of different things you can do online. It's not a kind of, right, crypto's here, everything else in the bin. So that would also kind of prevent them being too scared off by the whole thing.
Yeah, totally. It's a really good point. And because we always talk about decentralization, which can scare some people, right? Like this you know, idea of a world where there's no one controlling anything and, you know, it's all P2P. And so what we often say is that we're not really moving to a decentralized future. We're just moving to a more decentralized future than what we have now. And that's a really, like, important point to make, especially with these Web2 traditional companies.
And we kind of touched upon the education bit already, but it's very interesting that you say that obviously the language is very different. Everything around Web3 is very different to the Web2 native companies. And I've been to a lot of panels recently during the fashion months and overall the Web3 kind of loves conferences. And people are talking a lot about the point of education as maybe That's your kind of marketing failure, is if you didn't explain it well enough so people don't understand. Like, you don't need education, you just need to maybe make your UX clearer or work in your wording or something like that. But I'm wondering what you think about this education bit in the whole Web3 space. How would you tackle it? Do we need it at all? Do we need to educate the audience? Or do we need to simplify our products to make it appealing?
I feel very passionately about this. My background is in partnerships and enablement, and I always think that if you don't educate people, you're just going to run into troubles later on. I think that you can't advocate for a more decentralized future and then also say that people don't need to be educated about the autonomy and the ownership that that's going to bring for them. I think you don't have to go overkill on it. Like, it depends on what you're doing. So, for example, if you want people to be using NFTs or using crypto or, you know, POAPs or whatever, they're going to be getting a wallet. There's an inherent degree of risk there. You do need to educate them. That's just, it's careless if you don't. But if you are, like the example I used earlier on, in a kind of B2B situation, if you're like a financial institution and you're integrating blockchain technology to help you with like internal processes, like, you know, KYC or anti-money laundering or any of that sort of stuff, and all people have to do is upload their documents and behind the scenes, the blockchain's taking care of it, you probably don't, right? So it's like picking and choosing of what, where the education needs to be, where the risk is for the end user. I think there's a lot of like first movers in this space who are a little bit impatient. They want people to come along quickly. They want it to happen now, but it's not that easy for everybody else. And like you say, like with the jargon and the language that is like readily used in this space, it's really off-putting for people, and it's hard for people to get involved. And there's no structure to it. You know, if you start to try and learn about Web3, you could start anywhere, and like, you know, it'll take you on a crazy journey, but you have to be self-disciplined. You have to really want to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And I just think, yeah, it's a bit of a responsibility to bring people, of the companies that are in this space, to bring people along with them.
Yeah, people have to be very motivated to go and actually learn about this stuff in any great detail, because it's not actually something they desperately need. So yeah, you need to give them a reason to need it. But building on that sort of jargon point, something that we continuously hear in the Women of Web3 community is how, again, how alienating that jargon is and off-putting. And actually, the more we do to kind of get rid of these jargon and acronyms and actually say what we mean, that will speak to everybody. So I think it sort of does a doubly good job in terms of bringing more women into this space, because if you think about them as, if they are potential customer base, you're speaking to like the rest of the population. Even if you're not thinking about diversity as a, you know, good thing to do in a sort of more moral sense, it's a massive commercial opportunity, is speaking in a way that appeals to the other half of the population. So, I think that does start with the education piece, because, again, what we're hearing from women is that they feel like they need to know enough about sort of NFTs or crypto, anything like that, in order to transact on the blockchain, because the UX is, am I allowed to say clusterfuck on stage? A lot of it is a clusterfuck. The UX is, you know, it's quite hit and miss. So when people arrive there, they don't know what's needed, and they sort of lose motivation because they're thinking, this is too hard, this is right for me.
Exactly. No, I fully agree with everything that's been said. Education is how I got into the space. Like I mentioned earlier, I got in through financial education, actually through a company based here in the UK called Investment Mastery. And that's how I learned about crypto. And that's what made me feel comfortable about coming into the space and investing in assets that I didn't understand at the time. And it's only through education that we make people feel more comfortable and onboard more people. And especially with the Web2 traditional companies, they need the education to understand why they should even bother looking at this in the first place, right? But to the earlier points about the jargon as well. So one of our clients in Australia is actually, it's Australia's largest blockchain development agency, and they target both Web2 and Web3 companies. And we have completely different messages for both markets. So for the Web2 messaging, it's very simplified. We're saying, do you have this problem? Okay, and we can solve it. But in Web3, for the Web3 audience, we're saying, do you need DeFi and dApps and tokens and, you know, our smart contracts? Because they understand that. But if we were trying to use that language to the Web2 market, it would just go straight over their head. So, yeah, it's very important.
So basically, you're saying that the companies also need the education inside the Web2 company.
Absolutely.
For their employees to understand where they're going, right?
Absolutely. Because with the Web2 companies that we do work with, we find more progress with the companies where there's a Web3 advocate inside the business who understands, is passionate about it, is pushing for it as well. Where we have a Web2 company where there's nobody internally pushing for it, it's much slower and much more challenging.
Right.
I love that tip. Like, every business, like, should take home, like, whether you're a Web3 or a Web2 brand, like, to go back and allocate a Web3 advocate within it.
You'll find them. You know, like, how do you find a vegan in a room? Like, they'll let you know. It's the same with Web3. If, you know, if somebody's obsessed with Web3, they're, like, really obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're the ones going and doing that. We're the ones down the pub talking about it.
When we're working with DressX, we actually also propose our products to the influencers and key opinion leaders. And that has been our pain since day one, because obviously in traditional world, you offer a product in exchange for some support or testing or anything really. And when it comes to Web3 and digital industry, you obviously are offering either a technology or a digital product, something that doesn't really exist in a way, like you can't really touch it. So we found a lot of trouble was actually getting people excited about it and try it and maybe do some service for us in exchange for something that they can't touch. What is your take on working with key opinion leaders and influencers in Web3? How does it work for you, and do you have any advice on that?
I still give people lipstick, so but look, I think there's two things with influence marketing. The first is like truly finding who is influential for your audience. Now, that might be the head of HR in a business. That might be like the head of commercial. It might be more of like helping them do learning sessions in a business. You know, it's not always this kind of Instagram exchange. But when we think of it in that sense, actually, like, the trade-off of experience is another one that you can look at. And actually, this is just something that a lot of people will use in like the traditional fashion world, where they will take someone on an experience and in that time educate them on their product and their service, and that as well can be like a trade-off. So maybe your like exchange isn't your physical product, but it can be an IRL experience that they can still remember and still share that journey through. So that's some kind of like 101 tactics in old Web2 that I think translate just fine over.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is about getting clear on what that value exchange is, because, I mean, it's not as common now to be giving NFTs to influencers for good reasons, but that's not to say it's not possible at all. And so it's just thinking about what that value exchange is, because actually, as well as giving them some kind of digital token or, you know, having them as part of your community in some way, you probably are also going to need to pay them if you're talking about somebody seriously influential in any sense. But they might have a different, you know, basically sometimes companies are very ready to just be like, oh, but I'm giving you a free NFT. But actually, maybe that's not enough for influencers to want to, say, post about things, especially because of the kind of volatile nature of, you know, NFT markets and sort of broader Web3. There's a sort of reputational risk there. So it's also an opportunity to be educating those influencers too.
I was just going to say, I come from like a B2B environment. Not all influencers are on Instagram and TikTok. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people who are very influential within communities, at conferences, within the finance world. So like, you can always approach those people as well and see if they want to come into some sort of like introduction agreement with you, or referral agreement, or if they want to become an ambassador for your company. Again, usually it is an exchange of like monetary value, because it is their time and it is their reputation. But, you know, it doesn't have to always be online. Like, there's as much value to be gained from somebody who's very well connected in the real world as well, even if it's just to introduce the product that you have.
And especially in with this, when we talk of like this higher level opinion leaders in more of a corporate world, you know, you should always be really open as well into seeing how you can integrate people into like board of directors.
Yeah.
Because actually, like, people just love that. They love to feel like they have that higher level input and they're helping drive the industry. So, you know, invite people to the table. And again, you might find that that is going to really elevate your business and your brand building a lot more, being associated with these very, very high level corporate leaders. So that's another kind of door you can open that may not cost you much, if anything.
Your influencer or your thought leader, whoever it might be, might not be a Web3 person as well. It could be somebody who's like very well respected in like a traditional or Web2 industry, but who has their finger on the pulse, who's a bit of a future forward thinker. You know, someone that just popped into my head there was Martin Harbeck, who we worked with at Meta, who if Martin posts about anything on LinkedIn, it just blows up immediately. And he's always interested in emerging tech and what's happening. So it might not necessarily be someone who's like a leading voice in this space. It might be somebody who's going to be that kind of bridge between the two.
Can I just add that there's a whole bunch of rules coming into play in case you haven't heard about them, just with influencers and KOLs, especially in the UK. So you should definitely check that out as well, especially around promoting any sort of investment education. And yeah, so definitely check that out because it's all like playing out right now as we speak.
Obviously, as you know, Web3 space is very much prone to hype. And speaking back to our kind of main topic of the panel, what do you think is the best approach here? How do you get this long-term brand building mindset rather than, you know, getting into all of the hyped up topics and everything, and then suddenly it kind of goes away and now Web3 is actually not a very sexy word and, you know, NFTs are not popular anymore. How do you actually keep up with your strategy and make it work in the long term?
A strong marketing manager that pushes back. There's always going to be people within any business who, when the tide starts to turn, they'll kind of just ask, should we be doing this? Should we be doing this? Like, should we be directing our attention here? Should we just put a bit of AI in and say that that's what we're doing now? And, you know, having somebody who is at the helm of like your brand and your messaging who can kind of push back on that and say, no, we have a good product, we have a good idea, we're bringing value to our customers. You know, there's power in repetition, and like consistency is very key. Like, I think we get sick of our marketing messages a lot quicker than our customers do. We get sick of them before our customers have even seen them. Do you know what I mean? They go through that many iterations and approvals and all of that sort of stuff. By the time they actually go to market, you've almost got a bit of fatigue. But like, you don't know how long it's going to take for that messaging to resonate with your customers. So I think like just having somebody who owns that within your business and who is consistent with that is really important. I think chopping and changing, it only confuses your internal staff and your company as well, but it also confuses your customer about like what it is that you stand for, what's the value that you bring, and what are they going to get out of it. So I think just having that like one strong owner is really important.
Those values, that purpose as a business, that if you take away the hype of like, oh yeah, we're something exciting that's on the way up, what's your brand or your business actually about? Like, you know, what do you stand for? Would anybody else be able to repeat that back to you as to what your brand is about and stands for beyond just the kind of what the mechanism of what your product does? So and that will sort of hold that will hold true regardless of what the market is doing. Is if you sort of, yeah, as you say, sort of keeping repeating messages. Don't be afraid to hit people over the head with it, repeating your messages and what you stand for.
Yeah. So just to add to that, there's a statistic from Kerwin Ray, if you've heard of him, where traditionally consumers needed to see a marketing message 3 times before they retained it and took action, and because there are so many channels these days, that number has actually grown to 20. So consumers need to see a marketing message 20 times before they take action. So, you know, to all these great points, it's don't, you know, we get sick of our message quicker, as you mentioned. So don't be afraid to keep hammering that message a bit longer than you might have originally. But to answer your question around sort of, you know, building in this market, so, yes, it's around having a clear strategy and a plan and sticking to it as well. It's about having a very long-term vision, so not expecting everything overnight. So, you know, what we've found in the last 12 months in the longest bear market on record is it's actually been the best time for us because we're actually working with real, legitimate builders in the space. So people that are still here, in the longest bear market, you know they're here for the long run and they're the people that you want to partner with. Whereas in the bull market, we were having to turn down and say no to so many people with ideas every day. So it's actually been a really good time to build. And this is the time to build if you're, you know, working in this space.
And I would just like leave you, I guess, with like a little bit of faith. You know, no matter what industry you're in, like marketing for any brand is always going to be like this. And like sometimes you're hot right now and that lasts a year, and then a competitor comes along and it crashes and it comes back up the next year. That can be days, weeks, months, but like that is going to be building a brand and a business, and you have to always be strategic and agile at the same time. So I guess it's a little bit like, don't fret, but just keep going.
Okay, that was actually very insightful and reassuring in a way in terms of marketing, but I'm just mindful of time. So I believe that Lauren, Renee, Niamh and Camila are all staying here for a bit. So if anyone has any question, please catch us after the panel and feel free to ask us anything. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. If you've liked this episode, please do give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really helps more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to find our talent collective you can apply to be part of, or post your Web3 vacancies on our jobs board. If you've got any questions or comments, just tweet us at womenofweb3co, and we'll see you next Thursday morning.